Good evening, everyone. I'm Lynn Ormoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Today's show is a special edition of Health Chat as we take a look at how some men and women are making social impact and through various initiatives contributing to impacting communities and countries. They are fellows of the Global Good Fund, a not-for-profit organization that identifies high-potential leaders and provides the coaching plus capital to accelerate their social impact. And it sounds so good. I hope I can become a fellow one day. So joining us via phone from Arlington, Virginia, outside of Washington, D.C., is Carrie Rich. Carrie is co-founder and CEO of the Global Good Fund. Carrie, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
It's good to have you. Also joining us are two of the fellows, along with Carrie. Tony Ndugu, founder and director of Kitabu, a textbook subscription app built to provide low-income access to digitized versions of Kenyan textbooks. Tony, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, super thanks for having me as well.
Fantastic. Last but not least is Kevin Gibbons, co-founder and executive director of Health Access Connect, which links Ugandans in remote areas with healthcare resources through the company's main program, MediCycles. Kevin, it is so good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Carrie, let me start with you. The Global Good Fund, as I described it, well, as I said earlier, is dedicated to really empowering social entrepreneurs, if I could say that. Can you give us a sense of what the organization does, really?
Sure. Well, we were founded on the premise that high-potential young people can positively change the world through entrepreneurship, and that what they really need is a platform, a way to get exposure to the world, some mentoring from people who have experience, and financial resources to help grow their leadership and positively impact the world. So like you said, we're a 7-year-old nonprofit organization, and we identify 2,000 leaders across the world each year who apply to be Global Good Fund Fellows and enroll a select few in the Global Good Fund Fellowship, which is a 12-month virtual fellowship program where we invest in the leadership of the entrepreneur, knowing that he or she will improve the lives and the communities they serve through entrepreneurship.
Fantastic. And let me come to you first. I will start with Kevin. So, Kevin, you are the co-founder and executive director of Health Access Connect, as I mentioned earlier, which links Ugandans in remote areas with healthcare resources. Talk to us about the very beginning. What prompted you to start this initiative, given that you are not Ugandan, actually?
That's right. I'm American.
Yes. So why did you want to start such a project?
I was a Peace Corps volunteer in the Philippines, and that's when I first grew a real taste and a love and a calling for community work and community development. And then when I, following the Peace Corps, I did a master's, and I went and studied livelihoods in fishing villages in Uganda on Lake Victoria. And when I was there, white people in Uganda are called Muzungus. Mm-hmm. And so they would say, Muzungu, come build a hospital. I wasn't asking about public health. I wasn't really interested in it at the time. But the thing that was striking to me is people could point to their neighbors and say, that neighbor died of HIV/AIDS 3 weeks ago. That other one passed away 2 months ago. And to me, it was like there were... just 3 miles away, 5 kilometers away, there was a health clinic with free services. It's like the country has what it needs, and yet it doesn't reach people on the ground. And that's a global problem. Mm-hmm. And when I saw it in these remote fishing communities, it was one of these puzzles and one of these challenges that is worth dedicating your life to.
Okay, that's fantastic. And Tony, it's to you now. You are not a Muzungu. You are from Kenya. So talk to us about Kitabu. It's a textbook, a subscription app. Talk to us about why you decided to start it.
I think just like Kevin says, it's about finding a problem and being dedicated to solving it, irrespective of where you're from. For me, being dyslexic and growing up with ADHD, education has always been a challenge. Being able to go to school, participating in school successfully has always been very difficult. But then looking at other children, when you add things like access and affordability to the very basics of education, which is a school, a good teacher, textbooks, and all of that, I mean, we have about 15 million children who go to school every day in Kenya, and only one in six has access to textbooks, a good teacher, and a good classroom. It's about fixing a problem that is available and accessible, that provides children with an opportunity to grow. So for me, Kitabu, which is Swahili for book, became an entry point to solve a very meaningful problem to a very needy community of people. And it's not that they don't have the resources to access. It's just sometimes the convenience is not there. And that's why a mobile application made so much sense. There are more mobile phones than there are toothbrushes in Kenya, which is a fact that I read that surprised me. I don't know if it's our dental hygiene that's the problem or if that there's just that many. But then if, looking at those opportunities, why not come up with something that can be done and solve a problem that is easy to solve?
Very, very interesting. So, Carrie, when you hear these stories, I mean, what prompted Kevin and Tony to start what they are doing and other fellows, because there are many other fellows that the organization is supporting. How do you select the fellows that you support? Because, I mean, these stories are equally so empowering. It must be very difficult, right?
Absolutely. And first, let me just say that the privilege to wake up every day and serve other people who are dedicated to using their lives for good. We get 2,000 applicants a year, and we've supported 105 candidates to date and have a pool of about 8,000 social entrepreneurs globally that we have not yet supported. How do you figure out who to support? It's a really difficult question and challenge. We look for people who are coachable. So we're looking for people who are willing to take feedback and incorporate it into how they do business and into their own leadership development, mm-hmm. and who are committed, they are unwaveringly committed to doing the right thing, to acting according to their values, and to continue to put the mission first as their companies grow. And ideally, we're looking for key leverage points in society, meaning that one person can have a great ripple effect. Like I said, we've supported 105 entrepreneurs to date, and they've collectively impacted 8.5 million beneficiaries.
Wow. Okay. And so, Kevin, Carrie said, she mentioned commitment among everything else that she said. What did it take? Commitment is such a critical component of putting together a project and taking it to fruition. So what did commitment mean to you in terms of what it took from you and what it asked of you?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind was the commitment, not just of me, but of my friends and family. I think when you try something that hasn't been tried before and you take a big risk with your life and your career, you know, my wife, my parents, everyone took that risk with me. And I don't think anyone can do something where they like that, a risk-taking venture, without the support of a lot of people behind them. Mm-hmm. I haven't been paid yet. I've yet to receive a salary from what I do. And it's not clear that I'll be paid next year. And I think that can't last forever, but that's part of my commitment, and that's part of what reminds me that what I'm doing is difficult, but it should be something that becomes a career. It should be something that supports me. But then it's easy for me to see all the fortune that I have in my life, where I can chase this dream and chase impact, and have the resources to go after it when many people don't, and still be dedicated to making that change that I would love to see in the world.
Mm, that's so inspiring. And Tony, to you, what does commitment look like? What did it take and ask of you? I mean, especially given the fact that, you know, you were dyslexic with ADHD, and knowing the healthcare system in some of our countries, they may not be necessarily equipped to address your challenges. So talk to us about your commitment.
I think commitment is about choice. It's about deciding you're going to do something, be someone, change a particular aspect of your life or somebody else's life and stick into it. And so for us, at Kitabu, what we've committed to is an entire country's education system. And we've committed to being that group that we said that Kari talked about, being those individuals that create something different, something new, and transform not just the way we as a generation see education, but the way every generation that comes after us sees education. I say this because the future of work is so different. The 10 top most wanted jobs today are very different from the 10 most wanted jobs 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And it's going to happen again in another 10 years. Yet we have more than 300 million young people in Kenya who have graduated and are looking for work. And they need to realize that placement is not going to be down the street or in the next town. It could be in a completely different continent. And if you don't prepare this 300 million kids for that future of work, then what is it that we're giving to our generation or the one that comes after us? And that's what commitment is to me. Deciding you're not going to do it just for you, you're going to do it for everybody who comes after you. And being dedicated to that cause like Carrie has been for 105 people, like Kevin is for a couple of years without a salary, like I am with my team in the office, knowing that we're not going to try and impact 100,000 kids. We are going for all 15 million of them. Mm. And no more than me, we're going to get this done in our lifetime.
We sure do hope you reach all of them. So, Kari, talk to us a little more about the projects that the Global Good Fund are, the projects that are available to fellows, and how, what is the process? What are they doing during that time?
Sure. So we take 6 months to vet each of the entrepreneurs and select the entrepreneurs that we'll support. And they get onboarded as Global Good Fund Fellows in January, and that's the start of a 12-month virtual leadership development program. And our theory is that it really doesn't make sense to bring people to the U.S. and think you're going to fill them up with any knowledge that is relevant back home, rather to invest in people in their places of work where they're on the front lines making a difference. And so we've really worked hard to create a virtual mentoring program. That's someone who's an executive coach by training and has decades of experience to work one-on-one with each entrepreneur to interpret the results of a 360 leadership assessment. This is a proprietary tool that the Global Good Fund developed to assess leadership at a given point in time and give a panoramic view of that individual's leadership performance at this current moment. The leadership coach helps interpret the results of that data, and each entrepreneur creates a leadership development plan with quarterly goals. We have a Global Good Fund Summit, which is this week in the Washington, D.C. area. And at the summit, each of the entrepreneurs meets his or her leadership coach as well as the executive mentor. And these are folks running $40 million to $60 billion companies whose time is not for sale. And they take their gift of time one-on-one and share their experience with these emerging entrepreneurs, and Global Good Fund funds the implementation of the leadership plan for the remaining 9 months of the fellowship.
Okay. All right, Kevin, Tony, and Carrie, we will continue our discussion. We have to take a short break. And to our listeners, we'll be right back. Don't go away, and we'll have more on this very, very empowering conversation, I have to say. So we'll be back. Don't go away.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late, tonight we are discussing social impact with my guests, Carrie Rich. She is co-founder and CEO of the Global Good Fund, Tony Ndugu, founder and director of Kitabu, and Kevin Gibbons, co-founder and executive director of Health Access Connect. So, Tony, let me come to you and ask you to explain to us about this app and really how does it work? How available is it? Just tell us a little more about it, please.
So Kitabu is Kindle, basically, for Kenyan education textbooks. What we've done is built an application for Android devices because that's primarily what is used in Kenya. 90-something plus percent of the devices are Android. And we've taken all the curriculum textbooks required for students to go through the Kenyan education system, talk to the publishers, have a revenue share with them, and put their content on the mobile device. We've then added audio books, video content, examinations that are usually seen in schools and in the national realms. And we've added, you know, fun things for kids to do, like group chats and courses they can be able to follow, much like Udemy, on the application. Downloading the app is free. You download it on the Play Store for free. Add all your school details. And we use mobile money payment, which is huge in Kenya, to allow people to rent books instead of buying them. Now, let me just give you context so you understand why it makes so much sense. When you rent a book, you spend less than 94% of the total amount of the book on renting it for the day that you need it. So you can rent a book for a day, a week, a month, or a school term. So if a book, for example, costs $7 on the shelf, right, that's 700 shillings, and you need that book for a couple of classes through your year, and you rent it, it will cost you less than about 13 shillings, which is 0.013 of a U.S. dollar. And it's so much more affordable because it's digital, so it's already cheaper. It's with you there when you need it, and then you can, you know, stack it up and put it in the library when you don't. But most importantly, it takes seconds to access, and that's the biggest challenge. There are not enough, just like Kevin talked about healthcare access, there are not enough libraries or bookstores for kids around the country to be able to access them, especially in remote areas. But there are mobile devices. There are 4G or LTE connections there. It's easier for a child to download a book for free on their mobile device and rent it for a shilling a day than it is for the parents to ride a bicycle a couple of kilometers to look for a textbook. Wow. And so that's why the logic makes so much sense, which is exactly like mobile banking. When banks were, you know, in 15, 20 years ago, the only way to store and access money, you had less than 7% of the whole country using a bank account. But once mobile money came in, now it's up to 84% of the whole country is banked. It's because it's about convenience. Mm-hmm. And that's what we have tried to build, an education access system that is built around the end user. It's convenient, it's fun, it's accessible, and it's extremely affordable.
And it sounds very good, I must say. And
definitely very good.
So let me ask you this. In terms of cost, do the books cost the same digitally as they are, you know, like the
rent? No, they don't. Oh, my dear. They do not.
We never know.
It's first of all, it's 70% less.
Okay.
Because there's no hard copy of buying. Second, you're renting, which makes it more affordable. I think I can't even give you the numbers because now we're talking about
sense. It makes sense.
It's super cheap. And one of the fun things about being a Global Good Fund fellow is because there's a lot of things that mobile money and mobile technology have done for Africa that are equivalent to what the industrial age did in the U.S. and other countries like those. It's about finding out how to take advantage of the opportunities we have and scale them so that it's not a Kenyan product anymore. It becomes an East African, Sub-Saharan African product. And scales, because a lot of African countries face the same challenges with infrastructure and roads and access. So a lot of what Kevin and I are doing are scalable exponentially. But what is not available is that upskilling and that industrial age thinking that places like the U.S. and Europe have. So that's the big advantage of having the Global Good Fund, giving us the wings we have.
Okay. And this brings me to you, Kevin. Medicycles, what is it? Talk to us about Health Access Connect, how it works on the ground, and also the Medicycle, which is one of the main programming in the company.
Yeah, and I want to add on to what Tony said in that some of what why Global Good Fund is interested in us and is our vision, right? And I think one of the major visions we have, at least in Health Access Connect, is one, that we're committed to improving the Ugandan health system, not working outside of it, not trying to create something that will improve upon it, not looking down upon, you know, the health system that's there. And number two is using the resources and the context and the culture that's already in the country to help meet a need and a problem. And I think that's why Global Good Fund wants to invest in us, in Tony and me, more than our models or our apps or whatever thing. Mm-hmm. And so for us, you know, improving that Ugandan health system is that the issue we're trying to solve is that there is healthcare available in the system, but it just doesn't reach remote areas. Mm-hmm. And so what we do, and then the second thing is that everything you need is already in the country, you know, basically. And so we do the logistics of bringing Ugandan health workers to remote villages on a monthly basis. And every month, that means you as a patient who lives 5 kilometers or 20 kilometers from the nearest health facility, you know that every month those health workers are going to come. And you can go get your checkup. You can go get your antiretroviral treatment if you're HIV positive. Mm-hmm. You can get your family planning method. And so that continuity of care using Ugandan health workers and the Ugandan health system and a Boda Boda, which is a motorcycle taxi, which is already available in the country, using those resources, combining them in a way so that you can deliver care and improve people's health. That's what we do.
Fantastic. Kerry, as you help men and women make impact socially, what lessons have you learned as an individual, but also as a group through the organization?
One of the personal lessons I've taken away from this work is that we really shouldn't expect other people to invest in us unless we first invest in ourselves. And so the Global Good Fund staff actually goes through the same exact experience that we have the fellows going through. We each have a coach, a leadership development stipend, and leadership development plans that we use on ourselves in addition to supporting the Global Good Fund fellows.
Okay. And to you, Tony, any lessons learned in your work?
Commitment, commitment, commitment. You have to show up all the time. It's never been easy to be able to do what we're doing. It's a sacrifice and a very big one for not just ourselves, but those who care about us and our family members and the staff that we work with. And any opportunity to get partners and fellows around you, whether it's a Global Good Fund or it's customers and friends or people like yourself who do journalism and spotlight what we do. I think what the story that needs to be told is that we're trying very, very hard in Africa, whether we're Africans or Africans by birth or by adoption, like Kevin is, my African brother now. It's about trying to be the solution of the problem, not looking elsewhere, but just creating the solution ourselves. And I think we all need to jump into that train.
And lessons learned for you, Kevin.
I think, your vision should drive everything. Your vision makes partners. That's how we became partners with Global Good Fund. That's how we became partners with the government health workers that we work with and the government officials who approve what we do instead of denying every request we make. Hopefully that's how it leads to bigger funding, that vision for the world that you can live in together, that's what should drive everything. And that's, I think, difficult, and I still don't know how to do it, but it's, you know, top. And then the second thing is that money is everything. You know, at early on, I thought of myself as a community organizer, as a person who meets people at the table, who tries to solve challenges. And now I think of myself much more as a salesperson selling that vision in our organization. And I have to go door to door, and I have to really scramble for that money. And I don't do the other stuff that got me involved with it. And that's okay. But it's the life.
That's the life we live.
Okay. Before we wrap, I want to get from you, each of you, if you could answer this. Given looking at the impact that you are able to see through your work, what do you hope to see in the next 5 years, starting with you, Carrie?
We're trying to scale the number. I have my answer ready.
Yeah.
We are trying to scale the number of entrepreneurs we can support. So last year we supported 33 entrepreneurs. We've just launched a new program called LEAP, which will support 43 additional entrepreneurs that we'll announce tomorrow evening. So you're the very first to know. We've allocated $250,000 that the Global Good Fund is putting up, and we're now finding matching funds. So we are at 65 entrepreneurs this year, and next year we'll be at 100.
That's great. Tony, to you.
In 5 years, I definitely want to see as many children in Kenya doing the national examination on a digital platform. No more papers being handed out to 1.6 million children around the country. I would like them to sit in a classroom with a digital device and instantaneously be able to access the Kenya national examination all at a go at the end of the year. For me, that would be the nexus of the work we've done. And I would feel really empowered to see these young people able to compete with the rest of the world on an international level because of their ability to use technology to their advantage.
That's a big ambition, but given your passion, I'm sure it will not be impossible. And to you, Kevin.
In 5 years, I'm looking at a world map, and right around Lake Victoria in East Africa, you see a lot of little dots and pinpoints of all the villages that are receiving, you know, remote villages, difficult to reach areas where people die early deaths, and they're receiving treatment and care every 1 or 2 months and are having better lives and living the lives that they want to live. And then if you zoom out, you also see a few pins around the world of other organizations and people who are using our model and trying to solve their own particular health logistics challenges to really reach healthcare to remote areas. And I'd love to partner or spread or just send our contracts of how we do our work and see other people see the same ambition and potential in the areas they work.
We'll be keeping an eye on it, and I'm sure you're going to make it. And Carrie, Kevin, Tony, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
And that's all the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. Carrie Rich is co-founder and CEO of the Global Good Fund, Tony Ndugu, founder and director of Kitabu, and Kevin Gibbons, co-founder and executive director of Health Access Connect. For more on today's show, log on to facebook.com/VOA Health Chat, and let's keep the conversation going. And if you would like more information on the Global Good Fund, drop us a line at healthchat@voanews.com, or you can also find it on our Facebook page. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington with producer Bonsa Tufa. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is James Buckley, Managing Editor and host of VOA's Daybreak Africa show. Join us Monday through Friday at 03, 04, 05, and 0600 hours UTC as we bring you the latest Africa news, features, and thoughts. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our mail segment by sending your comments to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. That's Daybreak Africa right here on VOA Africa.
Border Crossings.
Join host Larry London.
Larry London.
On Border Crossings, VOA's only worldwide music request hour.
Whoa.
Every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in for the biggest hits and amazing artists. Win prizes and get the latest news from exclusive celebrity interviews.
Ooh.
Send your requests to Facebook at VOA Larry London, Twitter at Border Crossings, or Instagram at Border Crossings VOA. Or call 202-619-2077 and have your favorite music played to the entire world.
Ah.
Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal, only on The Voice of America.
This is VOA News. I'm